September 3rd, 2005, item number 83. Today's guest is David Ives, CEO of Podscope.
Podcast411.com. Listen different.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rob, and this is the Podcast 411 Podcast. Before we get into the interview with David, a couple quick news and notes. First, if you'd like to hear me on the other side of the microphone, Bazooka Joe over at the Small World Podcast was gracious enough to interview me, and that podcast is now up. You can find the link to that in the show notes, and show notes can be found at podcast411.com. And even if you don't want to hear me on the other side of the microphone, I still recommend you go out and check out the Small World Podcast, a very excellent podcast. Joe does a great job down there in San Diego. It's Saturday, so we're going to have another tech tip from Michael. Here we go.
I'm Michael Carino from the Digital Media Cast Experiment with another Podcast 411 tech tip. One of the most important tools to a podcaster is the microphone. Microphones come in hundreds of different flavors, ranging from a couple of bucks to thousands of dollars per unit. When you're looking for a microphone for your podcasting rig, here are a few terms you'll want to know. Pickup pattern, dynamic range, and capsule type. The pickup pattern describes where, in relationship to the microphone, the unit will hear sound. The two most common patterns are non-directional, sometimes referred to as omni, and directional, also known as cardioid. Most podcasters will want a cardioid microphone. It will help you cut down on a lot of the background noise. The dynamic range of a microphone describes the range of vibrations per second the mic will hear. The human ear supposedly hears about 20 to 20,000 vibrations per second, also called hertz, and most good microphones will cover a large portion of that spectrum. Good low frequencies will deliver the thunder, whereas the high frequencies will deliver the breath and little mouth noises we all make. The capsule refers to the method of pickup used to convert vibrations into electronic signals. There are two popular methods of doing this. The first is a dynamic microphone. This produces a signal by moving a coil attached to a membrane back and forth over a magnet. Dynamic microphones can be operated without batteries and are usually more durable than their counterparts. Condenser microphones use an electrically charged membrane that is held really close to another. The vibrations let more or less electricity pass through the circuit. Condenser microphones normally have a wider dynamic range and are usually more delicate. They also frequently need outside electrical sources. Though the more you spend on a microphone, the better chance you have of it sounding good, technology and unique characteristics in your voice make it possible for even less expensive microphones to produce really nice results. The best bet is to try before you buy. Good luck on your quest to be heard, and thank you, Rob, for letting me talk to your audience.
Michael, thanks as always for the tech tip. If you out there have a tech tip you'd like to share with the audience, please send those tech tips to podcast411@gmail.com. On today's show, our guest will be David Ives, CEO of Podscope. For those of you not familiar with Podscope, it is a search engine that searches on spoken words. Not searching on meta tags, not searching on ID3 tags. It's actually searching based on the words that have been spoken in a podcast. This is a great way to find, as for example, where your podcast has been mentioned on other podcasts. Well, we're going to go ahead and get into the interview here. I do want to say, please stick around. At the end of this interview, I have an announcement to make on a new service that Podscope's launching next week. So here's the interview. Here we go. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob.
I'm going to go ahead and ask you the first question. I normally don't do it, which is, I usually leave it for podcasters, but I'll ask you, what was your first computer?
It was a Texas Instruments. I think it was a TI-99...
4A?
4A,
yep.
Yeah.
TI-99-4A.
Yes. Yes, in fact, it's still in my basement. It's moved with me over the years, and I still have the cassettes with my software programs on it. Someday I'm going to see if I can recover them.
I came very close to having that as my first computer. It was down to that and the TRS-80 color computer.
Yeah, TRS-80s are what I first learned on, went to school with those.
So that would put you right about the same age as me. You probably graduated high school in early to mid-80s.
I'm a little older, 79.
Okay, just a few years older. Now, I'll ask you this question too, and then we'll get into your service. But what was the first podcast you listened to?
The first I heard of podcasting was in February of this year, 2005, but I honestly don't recall what that first one was. I think I went on a bit of a frenzy listening to a number in succession because I was so fascinated by the concept.
Well, if you only heard about it in February, you guys rolled out your service really quick.
We did it very quickly.
Because, you know, other than the fact that I know I saw some people thinking that your service was only launched this month, you were actually up. It must have been early
April, actually.
April, okay. I was going to say, okay.
We moved very quickly, and we were uniquely positioned to move quickly because we have been working on voice recognition problems for over 5 years. So most of our efforts have been done basically under the radar. We have been working with law enforcement agencies, working on a number of word spotting applications, and we frankly have not been publicizing our efforts. And when I discovered consumer-generated media in the form of podcasts, I thought, wow, this is exactly what we do. And in fact, in most cases, we index lesser quality audio than what is found in a typical podcast. So it was an exciting eureka when I started listening to these. Also, being in the search business, which we are for television and radio, we realized there was an opportunity to perhaps be the first to offer a true audio search engine. And we do feel like we have some advantages by being first to market with this. And we know the big boys are coming, but we're running fast too.
How many podcasters or podcasts have indexed themselves with your site?
Well, when you say index themselves, it's a combination. We have editors who go out and scour various resources to find podcasts.
Okay.
And then we have a submission link so that we have a number of podcasters, dozens a day, submit their link to be indexed by us. So as far as individual unique podcasters, we're a little over 4,000. The actual number of podcasts is approaching 25,000. And we probably add between, depending on the length of the podcast, we add between 200 and 400 podcasts a day to our database.
There are some podcasts that recently, I think This Week in Tech in their last show talked about your service. I'm not sure if they didn't know about it before. It sounded like they didn't know about it. So, you know, they're supposed to be the icons.
Right. Well, we have, we're not PR savvy, but we're becoming more so. And we have engaged someone to help us get out some press releases and make ourselves known. In fact, we recently put out a release that has been mistakenly picked up as by some people as thinking that we just launched this recently, as you mentioned. But we continue to be discovered, and the good news is, at least in the blogging community where we're talked about quite a bit, so far we've been very well received for what we're doing.
And I mentioned you probably was late April, early May, and I've had a link. And if anyone wants to submit the URLs, go to my directory of directories and look for Podscope, and you can submit your URL there.
That's right, and that also applies to video. So anyone who has video blogs or any form of video, our system will index that just as it does with audio podcasts.
Did you get to hear the comments that This Week in Tech made about Podscope?
I did not.
Okay. One of the things they mentioned in there is John Dvorak in his typical negative way.
I haven't seen – the last time I saw John was about – almost 20 years ago, and it was at Spencer F. Katz pajama party. Do you remember Spencer F. Katz in PC Week? It was a piece that ran on the last page.
Okay.
Yeah,
but you're stretching my memory now.
Okay. That may be showing my age. But anyway, okay, so what did John have to say?
Oh, well, his comment was he didn't see how with the different audio qualities out there, how it was going to pick up on the different words, how well it was going to do for finding different words. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, it is. Speech recognition is very much a combination of science and art. It is not 100%, and people have generally accepted that while it continues to improve every year, you have to have a tolerance for what you're going to miss. So our challenge over the last 5.5 years of doing research and development and trying different techniques, we have found that by combining different speech recognition components, we can actually get a better result. So without getting into the specifics of the pros and cons of different types of voice recognition, the bottom line is we have combined techniques to create a solution that increases the accuracy. Now, I could name off percentages of accuracy, but it really varies because absolutely, audio quality is a factor. Certain proper names are a factor. For example, I don't know if Dvorak is a proper name that we would immediately pick up. Now, I could go into my system and tell it from this point forward, pick up every time Dvorak is mentioned, and it would do it with over 90% accuracy. But there are those types of efforts that are involved with voice recognition that are part of the state of the art today, and the combination of improved software and improved hardware continue to improve, but it's not quite there.
Now, I know for me, when I have to do my ego search, sure. I do podcast space F-O-U-R space O-N-E space O-N-E for podcast 411.
Right. And that is a, in the current incarnation, that is the way that we represent numbers. And that is partly because if you were to type 411 as a number, we wouldn't know if that was pronounced 411 mm-hmm. or 411. So there are those sort of idiosyncrasies associated with audio search. And what we have found in our TV and radio search business, where we monitor 120 channels in six countries, and we do this 24/7, we have found that there is an acceptable level of omission because we are illuminating what would otherwise be completely opaque. So by monitoring a radio station 24 hours and maybe only being 75 to 80% accurate on the spoken words in that radio station, we still are illuminating 80% more than would otherwise be searchable.
When someone does a search result, you get these audio clips that you can actually play and hear.
That's right.
How many seconds before and after the mention of what you're looking for is played?
It's an arbitrary pre-roll. We play about 2 to 3 seconds before your keyword is spoken, and then we'll continue playing for a total of 12 seconds.
You know, podcasters out there, if you're looking for a way to find out who's mentioning you in their podcast, this is a good way to find out where you're being mentioned. So one of my friends told me I was mentioned in This Week in Tech because they had done a search on podcast 411, and I had come up in This Week in Tech. And it's interesting when you do this where you find yourself mentioned in other podcasts, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I got to send a thank you to that person for mentioning me, and it's a nice feature. It's a nice function, but even more important, if you're looking for a subject matter that you would Google, try doing it in Podscope. It's interesting to find the results.
Yeah, the reality is most podcasters attach a certain amount of metadata to their podcasts, and that is always going to be a very small subset of the actual content that is within the podcast. So by making a spoken word index, we're illuminating every spoken word within the podcast and enabling you to determine the relevance of that particular podcast before you perhaps subscribe to it or listen to it on your PC.
Okay, so I just did a quick vanity search for podcast 411, and on the first page, there's obviously my interviews, but then there's mention in the July 22nd accident hash and the July 22nd show 40 from the M show. So
right.
John and CC, thank you for the mentions.
And we're also going to be providing an RSS feed shortly, Rob, where you could actually subscribe to that search, podcast 411, and then you could have it be notified whenever it's mentioned on podcasts.
Oh, well, that's really nice. I like that. When will that roll out?
A few weeks. Probably in September we'll have that capability.
Well, gee, that's a long time for the way you guys work.
I know it is. We have a few things on the burner right now.
So how long was it from the time that you said go to the time you actually had the service up and running? How many weeks?
I think it was 4 weeks. Lots of coffee, lots of pizza. But the guys, it was a very exciting project, and we were able to make exciting progress almost on a daily basis. And it was just an adrenaline-filled experience getting it pushed out the door.
Will you be at the Podcast Expo in November?
I expect to be there, yes.
Okay. Are there any other services that you plan on rolling out between now and November with relations to podcasts?
Well, we're excited about some business deals that we're involved in. That one that we've recently executed will be distributing Podscope in a significant way to millions of users, and we hope to make that announcement in the coming weeks. We have also been working hard on adding some premium content to Podscope, so that in addition to the consumer-generated media, there will also be the ability for people to subscribe to other types of content that is spoken word.
Is there anything else about Podscope that you think the listeners would be really interested in knowing about what you're doing?
Well, there are really a number of features that we're going to be adding, but we prefer not to talk about them until we put them out there.
Do you have a mailing list where people can subscribe so that when there's new features rolled out, they're automatically notified, or an RSS feed?
We have a blog, but it's not particularly, we're not actively making entries to it, but the blog is probably the best way to track what's going on.
Well, I guess, folks, I'll have to track it and let you know. Now, you have listened to bits and clips of podcasts, so is there advice as a listener you'd like to offer out to podcasters, something you'd like to say, hey, I hear this all the time, don't do this, or here's what I hear from when I'm listening and that I do like?
Well, not being a podcaster, I really don't want to throw too many stones.
Oh, they can take it. They got thick skins.
Yeah, well, it's for us to be effective with our search capability, the quality of the speech, talking over each other. I mean, one of the reasons I listen to Don and Drew is because you have a male voice, a female voice, and you have some talk over, and it really gives us an opportunity to fine-tune our audio search capability. So obviously speaking clearly gets the best results, but we're working on all of the challenges, and including being able to spot words that are spoken during background music and other forms of background sounds.
Well, that's a good point. How does background music affect this? Because I know some people's background music is really the foreground music and their speech becomes the background.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens. And there is a threshold where the music will overwhelm our ability to detect the spoken word. And there are no numbers to that, but sort of as you describe it, Rob, and you can tell when the music is stronger than the spoken word, and our audio search engine behaves much like the human brain would in that environment. So, you know, I hear music, but I'm having a hard time hearing what the words are. We can handle background music as long as it is in the minority of the audio signal.
Yeah, I try to keep mine about 14 to 16 dB below my spoken words when I'm doing it in my intro.
Yeah.
Sometimes I talk a little bit lower, and that 14 becomes 10 because my normal
right.
speech is a little bit lower. But I try to definitely no less than 10 dB, within 10 dB when I'm doing background music.
We don't want to be prescriptive about it because we really want to be passive and pick up these podcasts, create the indexes, and not have people change the way they're doing things. But no question, if you want to have more of your content be discoverable through Podscope, you need to consider how much background music and how much background noise is part of the audio.
Now, the parent company that owns Podscope, which is TVEyes, how long has this company been in business?
I started TVEyes 6.5 years ago, and it was originally a dot-com idea to monitor news channels for active stock traders. As you may recall, in 99 and 2000, the market was bubbly, and day trading was in vogue, and we created a site that monitored financial channels and news channels to let people be alerted within seconds. At the time, it was only a text alert, but we'd fire off a text alert that your company or your CEO or whomever was mentioned, and you could click to come back to our website to see a larger transcript. Well, one of my developers, the whole concept of TVEyes came about because one of my developers was day trading instead of writing code for me. and he would say, oh, I just made another $1,000. And I said, okay, great. So what are you doing over there? And I thought, wow, this is a pretty cool notion. And there have to be a lot of workers in offices across the country that don't have access to daytime television. So we thought, let's create a site that does this. And that was the genesis, and we've expanded to now with 120 channels and full video, and we have the capability to work in over a dozen languages, so we continue to extend our reach.
Now, how many employees do you have?
There are 11 of us, but we're impressed by how much we've done with so few people.
Well, David, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, Rob, and certainly look forward to watching the new podcast come online and our playing a role in making those podcasts discoverable.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
You bet, Rob. Thank you.
Well, folks, that concludes our interview with David Ives, CEO of Podscope. Thank you, David, so much for coming on the show. It was great talking with you. Now, that special announcement I mentioned, if you go to the front page of Podcast 411 right now, in the upper left, you will see a Podscope search box. And this resulted out of the conversation me and David had after the interview. I said to him, you know, what would be a great idea would be if you could add a feature on people's web pages where, like now, where you have the option to do a search this web page, search all of the internet. Do a similar thing, search this podcast, search all podcasts. And they were able to roll that out in about 3.5-4 weeks. I was lucky enough to be their first one to incorporate that on a website. So thank you guys for letting me put that up first. You will see this feature. I think this is a great feature. If you want to go back in and do searches from your podcast or all podcasts, now you have the ability to do it yourself or allow your listeners to do it right from your main page on your website. Next week, the week of September 5th, they'll be rolling that out to the public. If you have any questions about how to contact them to get this feature, please send the email to rob@podcast411. Just put PodScope in the title. And if you need to check out their webpage, it's at podscope.com. Previously, I asked for feedback on how you would explain or issues you've had explaining podcasting to the general population. Here is one of those feedbacks.
This is Michael calling in. I listened to your podcast this morning, and you were asking questions about people who have heard a podcast versus people who haven't. And I thought I would share with you a little story about my experience that I had yesterday. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I go to a group meeting on Wednesday nights. And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately, and I've been getting very excited about the media and the potential for the media. So I've been talking to a lot of different people about the opportunities that may exist for whatever their specific interests are. In any case, I started to speak to the group about podcasts, and there was a group of about 12 people. And don't get me wrong, these people are educated professionals. This particular group has people from all walks of life, pilots, doctors, healthcare workers, real estate agents, all kinds of people. And I asked them if anybody in the group had heard of podcasts. And of the 12 people that were in the room, one raised their hand, happened to be a doctor, but even he wasn't completely clear on what they were. And I started to describe the opportunities available and what the technology involved, and I related it to recovery, 12-step recovery programs, and the potential for reaching lots and lots of people. And I had the whole group pretty excited by the end of it. Of course, I'm excited about it, and that kind of thing's infectious, but it was surprising to me that we had a group of people like this who are, you know, educated, intelligent people, and only one of them really even knew what a podcast was. I thought that was pretty interesting, and by the end of the meeting, they all knew, and I think that some of them are going to probably go out and investigate a little more deeply the technology involved. And I'm going to talk with the owner of the program that I go to the meetings at and find out if there's an interest there, and maybe posting some interviews, doing some lectures, and getting some podcasts out on their website. Anyway, thought you might find that interesting. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
Mike, thanks for that great story, which makes me think, you know what would be a great idea for a podcast, and I don't think anyone's doing it, I haven't seen it yet, would be an AANA cast. People would share their stories and then allow them to listen to other stories. So where people can't get out or don't want to get out or are afraid to go out in public, this is a way for them to really anonymously, submit their stories and then hear other stories of people suffering from these diseases. Again, you know, an AANA cast. Mike, you should start this if you aren't already doing it. And if anyone does start it and needs help getting their podcast going on this, let me know. Love to help you. At the end of today's show, we're going to be playing another Hurricane promo clip, and this one is from Chris from the Financial Aid Podcast, so please stick around and listen to that. We will be taking off Monday, September 5th, as it's Labor Day here in the U.S., so our next show will be Wednesday, September 7th, and our next guest will be Steve Ely from the Escape Pod Podcast, so please come back for that one. And again, please stick around at the end of today's podcast for the clip on the hurricane relief and how you can help from Chris from the Financial Aid Podcast. Well, that's going to do it for me today. This is your host from Podcast 411, as always, reminding you to listen different.
This is Chris from the Financial Aid Podcast with a message about Hurricane Katrina. Thousands of people need your help right now and in the months to come as the Gulf Coast recovers from this storm. There are plenty of ways you can help. If you can spare money, frequent flyer miles, company stocks, or volunteer your time, there are organizations who will make the most of your generosity, such as the American Red Cross, accepting money, frequent flyer miles, and stock. www.redcross.org or 1-800-HELP-NOW. The Salvation Army, accepting money and volunteers. www.salvationarmyusa.org or 1-888-SAL-ARMY. Second Harvest, accepting money, stock, mutual funds, and monthly giving plans. If you are financially able to, setting up a long-term fund is a wonderful way to continue giving in the months to come. www.secondharvest.org or 1-800-771-2303. Habitat for Humanity, accepting money and volunteers. www.habitat.org. No matter which avenue you choose, please give generously, even after the media has moved on to the next big story. Your gifts will help rebuild lives. Thank you for your help.